Welcome to this edition of the Not So Common Podcast. My name's Pat Contry, and this week my guest is Pixel Dan Eardley. He's a big-time toy reviewer on YouTube. He's been on there since 2008. Some of his shows include From Pixels to Plastic. He has a toy hunting series. He also has the Geek Easy podcast. Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Pat. Thanks for having me, man. I'm looking forward to this.
Here we are, and we spoke about, but right before I started recording, you were like, wow, 10 years just about on YouTube. One of the wily veterans of the scene on YouTube, but you're in a realm that is sort of different from not just the guests I've had on, but from the retro gaming scene in general. While there are some connections, you are off in a little niche corner.
Yeah.
And toy collecting and toy reviewing has always been sort of, I think, a niche market on YouTube. Speak about, I guess, how you got started with it.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny because you talk about how there's a little bit of a connection there. And I joke a lot or talk, you know, with my wife a lot, but with all the different conventions and stuff that I go to. Like, I kind of walk in many different circles. You know, I've got kind of like this tie to the you guys in the retro gaming group. And the reason for that is because I first got into this, like many of us, because I started watching James Rolfe, and I was a big fan of the Angry Video Game Nerd series. And it was kind of one of those things where it was, you know, it inspired me because I wanted to do something too. I felt like I could do something, but I knew immediately that whatever I did, I had to do something different, and I had to do something that was of my own, you know, idea to differentiate myself. And that's when I decided, you know, I like retro games a lot, but I'm also a huge toy collector. Why don't I start doing some videos about toys specifically?
So you were fearful of being compared to James, so that's why you avoided retro games? Or you figured, I just wanted to do my own thing and stand on my own?
I wanted to get into that field, but I wanted to be different. I didn't want to be the angry video game reviewer. So what I did is I decided to talk about toys based on video games, and that's where the whole From Pixels to Plastic series came from. So that way I was still kind of in that retro gaming realm, but I went the toy direction instead.
What was your first retro console you had as a kid?
It was an Atari 2600 and also a Commodore 64. I grew up with a Commodore 64, yeah.
So we're both childs of the 80s. We're about the same age. So you grew up with, in terms of toys, I'm guessing, same ones that I did, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Thundercats, you know, Mask, if you want to go a little more obscure, esoteric. You know, I love Mask, one of my favorite 80s toy lines. Ninja Turtles.
Yep, He-Man.
You know,
got to throw He-Man. That's my big one.
A little
one.
Before my time, but I was there. Yes, He-Man's, you're Mr. He-Man at Comic-Con. We'll get into that. And then ending up with like Ninja Turtles, and I think the last toys I played with regularly before I figured I'm getting told to play with toys were probably the Marvel superhero
toy biz
lines
stuff, yep.
and X-Men toy
that's
biz stuff.
That man, your path is almost exactly the same as my path. Yep, I think
we're both old.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, yeah. I started feeling like I was too old for toys about the time of the toy biz Marvel and X-Men stuff, but then started getting back into it about the time Star Wars Power of the Force came out, and that's what sucked me back in.
Which is interesting because once you got to those toy biz figures in the early 90s, yeah, that first year of X-Men figures was pretty bad with like Magneto's maggot on his chest and the Storm figure that couldn't stand up with the big high heels. But by the way, everyone listening, this is going to be very toy-centric, so you know, go on Google and Google this stuff. Anyway, but once they started getting into like the Marvel figures – you know, and, you know, you had, like, I remember the Punisher was my first one, and then you had that Venom figure with the goo.
Uh-huh.
And then you had all those excellent X-Men figures. Once you got into the ones like Gambit, and you had, like, the second Wolverine, which actually had, like, you know, the yellow and blue costume, and then the second Storm figure. These were really, you got into almost like a new golden age of superhero toys, right?
Yeah.
And then at that point, though, I was like, I'm going into high school soon. I can't be playing with toys anymore.
Exactly.
You know what
right,
I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it's almost like wasted on me. I never quite made that transition like my cousins did and my friends did, where it went from that smooth transition where the McFarlane toy line came, where they kind of got the people that play with toys to get, wow, these are kind of like sculptures. You don't
right.
play with these Spawn figures. That I never got to that point. I was never like, oh, yeah, I'm going to buy that Malbogia figure that costs $80 at Toys R Us or whatever. I never looked for the Angela with the panty variant or the hell that one was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that never hooked me. I was out of the toys that came out the same time in the early 90s. And by that, at that point, though, by the mid-90s, I went back and bought, like, the retro, you know, the vintage Star Wars stuff. I don't know if you had a sort of similar path there, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, when the Star Wars stuff came back in 95, that's kind
of
what...
Power of the Force line.
Yeah, the Power of the Force line. That's kind of what started getting me, like... You know, I kind of want to buy these, but am I too old to buy toys? And I had that, you know, kind of like battle with myself.
Yeah.
But I mean, so then I did that thing where I was like, well, it's different because these are collectibles. You know, I had to do that thing where I told myself that these are collector items. It's different.
Which is funny because they're all worthless now.
That's exactly. I know. That's one of my favorite things. Every time you go to a toy show or anything, you see piles of those Power of the Force figures.
I remember they always were big on the Princess Leia one. Or the first print run was, oh, you got to look for the two lines in the belt versus three. So at the time, you were like, at the time, you actually thought it was rare. It's not rare. People just kept them, hold on to them. They made millions of the stupid things.
The short
or the Boba
sabers,
Fett with the
half circle
the
and
Boba
the whole
Fett
circle.
With the half circle.
or the short lightsabers versus the long sabers. Or
yeah.
The short lightsabers that were in the long saber trays inside the package. There were all kinds of ridiculous things that we were like, oh my God, this is super valuable. We got to find these. It was so dumb.
No toy made after like 1988 is rare, you know?
Exactly. Like... Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of one of those points I like to make now too, like, cuz, and I'm not against like people who like to collect their figures and leave them in the package,
no,
but
I'm
an opener for the most part. I mean, also I do videos, so I kind of have to open my toys, but you know, like, I like to enjoy them. I like to put them on the shelf and like to see them, so that's kind of my thing.
Is that a phrase in the toy collect community, like shelf collector for video games? Are you an opener or non-opener?
So they call it mint on card or mint in box. So there's the mint on card collectors and there's the loose collectors. And I don't think it's quite as like of a heated discussion these days as it was in like the early 2000s. But like on message boards in like the early 2000s, people used to like go to war over like, should we leave it mint in box or should we open it?
Wow. It's almost like the sealed collecting versus complete in box toy collectors. You're not a real toy collector because you're leaving it in the box. They're meant to be played with. Well, this one has never opened, so it's okay.
You pretty much just summed it up right there.
That's the same shit. Same shit just happened like 8 years before, you know, the video game community had it. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
Whenever I go to the swap meet, which is less and less, and we'll get into buying toys at the flea market and how that's changed probably the past 10 years, the same way it has in video games. But yeah, you see. Every swap meet now, almost every swap meet, you'll see Power of the Force 95 figures sitting there. You're like, wow, these are the ones I was chasing after. My toy store, I was looking for that Boba Fett. I was looking for that, even that, you know, that TIE Fighter pilot was a little bit hard to find back then. Now they're all over the place. But you always will see the next generation Star Trek figures.
Those things, okay, look.
From the late 80s, early 90s.
I love that toy line. It is
great.
That line has lost all value. I walked into a toy show just about a year ago, and there was this one guy who just had cases of unopened Star Trek The Next Generation figures, $1 a piece. And I ended up
absolutely.
I ended up walking. I was like, okay, so I buy.
I'll buy five Borg figures.
Yeah,
like an army.
Exactly. Why not? Because they're $1 a piece. It's amazing how that line has just dropped.
So at one point, guessing in the 90s, in the late 90s, I mean, probably early 2000s, was that like a hot line to collect? Like those are the ones that people all wanted?
Oh, totally, totally. And those were kind of the same way. I don't know if you remember, but those even have like collector numbers like printed on the bottom of their feet. And the box is even like touted like individually numbered figure or whatever like that. Like they tried to promote the collectability of that line.
And that was the Playmates one. The Galoob ones before that were for they came out with like 1 or 2 years only. The Galoob ones, right? The ones that were traditional 3 3/4 figures.
They were like basically like season one Star Trek. It was like, you know, No Beard Riker was in that wave and lots of Ferengi.
And just like the show, that first season was awful. You don't remember it.
It hadn't found its footing yet.
I just think it's interesting. It's almost like the 90s became not just for toys, but more so for sports cards and comic books, sort of the craze decade of, we think everything coming out, we're going to be able to retire on.
Yes.
So the companies took advantage of that. And rightfully so. If there's a bunch of rubes out there, whether it's variant Upper Deck hologram cards or variant comic book covers, like four different die cut covers.
I'd say all the foil shiny comic books.
All the idiots that lost their fortunes on Beanie Babies.
Beanie Babies. Pogs.
Pogs, which that was a quick death.
Yeah.
But within a year. But that they sort of tapped into this greed, retro greed, where all of a sudden people are like, wow, only 25 years ago, these comic books, we threw them out in these baseball cards. And now if we buy everything today, by the time we are right now in like 2015, we're going to be able to retire on this shit. Nope.
It's almost like that was kind of a turning point, though, too. You know, like that's definitely what was happening. But also that's when it became okay to buy that stuff and not be a kid to buy it. It almost kind of feels like, you know, or like at least more people were starting to do it and not feel so ashamed of doing it anymore because they had a reason for doing it. Right. They thought that it was a collector item.
So in the 80s, toys were still 100% kids. By the time you got to the mid-90s, you're like, okay, the Spawn figures are for quote-unquote adults.
Yeah.
You know, and then you could buy a Next Generation figure because little kids didn't watch Star Trek Next Generation. Those were all adults buying those toys, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I don't think little kids are playing with Counselor Troy figures. You know, I don't think that's happening.
I mean, I don't know. I was a big Counselor Troy fan.
Okay, Dan, we'll get into your pubescent development here.
Yeah.
We won't get into that.
No, but
hey, mommy, I want both the Counselor Troy figure and a what is it? The Doctor figure. What was the Doctor's name?
Crusher. Dr. Crusher. It's just maybe it's just our generation, right? Like our generation's like we love toys, we love video games. I guess we just never grew up.
Are we a man-child generation? Are we the first man-child generation?
We might be. I don't know. We're definitely the like it's funny, like, because even my parents or my dad specifically, he still doesn't get it. He's like, I don't know why, you know, you guys are still like he always talks about my generation still like buying toys and playing video games and stuff like that. And
the same with my dad. My dad was all ready to throw out. He, you know, let's just say the equivalent to us playing with G.I. Joes was say the Marx little plastic figures in the 50s and 60s, right?
Yeah.
So the little soldiers, you got like Civil War soldiers. Revolutionary War soldiers, like the Apache forts, those were the big kid toys in the 50s, right?
Right.
So my dad still has some of his little Revolutionary War figures. You know, you had the red coats, you had the British with the red, and the Americans were blue. And he has he unfortunately threw out like 80% of them, but he still has some left. He has like the little and everything back then was still metal. So he has like one of the metal houses, he has the walls. He's just ready to toss it out. It doesn't mean anything to him.
Yeah, exactly.
He has a six-shooter Colt 45. Like, that thing could be passed off as a real vintage gun. You know, you put the real rubber bullets in it. You can put caps in it. It's in great shape. He's like, yeah, I'm going to throw it out or just give it away. I'm like, no, I'll keep the fucking thing.
Give that to me.
I play with it as a kid. But that generation, you know, like the baby boomers, I guess it didn't matter to them to the extent of us, which is why those toys from the 60s and 50s and even 70s, there's a lot less of them because they were all thrown out. But we keep, from the 80s on, everything was kept, right?
Yes, exactly.
Even the Star Wars figures from the 70s, everyone kept them. Like, so
right,
that's
but
why
that,
the value
but that,
is
exactly.
So much less.
That goes right back to your point about the value, though. I mean, anything modern is probably not going to be worth anything down the road because everybody's collecting now. Everybody's buying that stuff and keeping it.
Yeah, so when I see, like, the NECA figures get announced, limited, you know, like the Comic-Con exclusives even, like they do, like, the Transformers, you know, G.I. Joe crossovers, people run out and buy those, but I don't think that stuff's even going to keep the value because the people, I think, that bought it originally have it. Like, there's not going to be a new market 30 years from now that's going to want that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a different mentality now when you produce stuff and market it as collector's edition right away.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And it really depends with some of the San Diego exclusives, but a lot of the times if you are willing to just wait that stuff out, it'll eventually get to a point where it's affordable enough for you to buy it if you still want it at that point, you know? But the problem is, I mean, it's just like with everything else today, everybody's got that gotta have it now attitude. So you feel the pressure, right? Like, I can't miss that. I've got to buy that, and it's tough.
Well, sure. It goes back to, I guess, the internet ruining everything. So when I started collecting, vintage Star Wars stuff in the mid-90s, and that was and toy shows were big. I don't know if they still are anymore.
I go to a lot. Needed to. Yeah.
But that was right before eBay. You know, eBay, I didn't say, probably didn't blow up until like 98, 99, right? So the only way I found figures was I had like a local toy shop that also had antiques. There was probably two of them within like a half hour. I went to there. I went to toy shows. There was one once a month in Totowa, New Jersey that was pretty good. And there was one once a month in another like Firehouse. You'd have like maybe 20 vendors once a month, you know? But it was decent, right? And then you had the old toy shop newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
In Barnes & Noble, which would advertise all the dealers that would be like, okay, here's the list of what, you know, if you want to sell your G.I. Joes or Star Wars figures, this is what it is. But you had to, like, call a number or mail to in. But what eBay showed was all this shit was not rare. These G.I. Joes were not hard to find. Everyone had them. And so I'd say the value of my stuff, and I sold my Star Wars collection when I first moved out of my parents' house, and that was in the mid-2000s. The stuff had not lost or gained its value since the mid-90s, surprisingly. It was about the same in like that seven-year span. So what happened was you had more and more people get into collecting it, I think because of the prequels. But at the same time, you had more and more people selling it. Because of eBay.
Oh, yeah.
And people were saying, oh, I still had these toys. So it sort of equaled it out. And if I looked at prices nowadays, I would say probably for 80% of those Star Wars toys, they probably haven't gone up in value because there's so many. Like, everyone has a loose Boba Fett figure. Everyone has a loose X-Wing. You know what I mean?
It's harder to find stuff. You know, like the blue Snaggletooth. He's still
blue
pretty expensive. You know what I mean? And I think the hardest part with a lot of that stuff now is, like, finding them with the accessories or getting, like, you know, the guys that have the capes, especially those vinyl capes that we're tearing. So, you know, it depends on what you're looking for in those, but yeah, you're probably like the main basic figures, you could probably still get a bunch of those for a decent price.
Do you want to talk about, speaking of, when I'm looking at video game collecting, I'd say we're about 10 to 15 years behind toy collecting where the scene's at for maturity. And unfortunately, with maturity comes counterfeits. And I am so glad that I am not into collecting vintage Star Wars stuff now versus when I got out of it. My cousin's now getting back into it. He was into it about 15 years ago when I got out of it. Now he's getting back into it. And he's telling me just now the amount of counterfeit card backs and mint on card figures that are out there and counterfeit weapons. Mm-hmm. That it's so hard. I don't know if you want to speak about how the scene's changed in the past 10 years in general to go along with sort of more and more people getting to it and the people getting into profit from the scene.
Well, I mean, it's just – it's that point now where it's so much more affordable to do the 3D printing thing or to mold and cast your own pieces or figures even. And so it's very easy for people to basically reproduce – weapons from Star Wars is a big one, like you were talking about. Reproduce weapons from Star Wars. And it's definitely a little bit iffy. And personally, here's the way I feel about it. Like, if somebody wants to reproduce some weapons so that they can complete their Star Wars figures or to help people complete their figures who don't necessarily care if it's the original pieces, I'm okay with that as long as it's easily identifiable on the weapon. Like, if they put an R on there for repro or reproduction, which some people, the honest ones, will do stuff like that. I think there's really nothing wrong with that. But when you have the people that are straight up reproducing the original weapons, then you can't differentiate them from the originals. That's definitely where things get a little murky, and, you know, now you don't know if you've got an original or not. You got the people that try to pass them off as the originals, which are just the scummiest of them all, you know?
So it's similar to video games where people are making reproduction, not just games, but manuals and boxes.
Yeah.
And reproduction labels. So now you have the honest ones that won't try to sell it. And like me and Ian say, if you're going to do that, just make sure it says reproduction somewhere
right
on the label.
Right.
So it's the same thing. I guess my cousin was telling me that there was a float test for weapons at one point where the repros would float.
Really?
Or no, the real ones would float.
Okay.
And the repros would sink. So I guess there was like a hollowness, but then they figured out that the counter figures, and they figured out how to reproduce them so that they floated. So like,
amazing.
Even weird shit like that, I'm just like, oh my God.
It's unreal, isn't it? Like, people...
Yeah, I remember going to the toy shows in the mid-90s and even some flea markets, and you'd buy a bag of real weapons at the time in the mid-90s for like 10 bucks. You'd be like, buy like 50 weapons, but now you can go on eBay and buy, you know, 100, you know, weapons. I look right now, you probably get 100 repro weapons for like $7, and that's all the ones you'll ever need for your figures, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of risky, but I mean, I don't know, I don't encounter the problem myself very often, but I think it's because of the things I collect. It hasn't really affected it too much yet. I think Star Wars and G.I. Joe are probably the two markets that get hit with that the worst. You know, I'm big into like He-Man and Ninja Turtles and stuff like that, and I don't think it's really become a problem in that field. Not yet, at least.
Well, it's probably harder. They're
yeah.
bigger, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, here we go. 20 Star Wars... let's see, $20 for vintage Star Wars weapons, and they look just like the original. You have, you know, there's about six or seven types of blasters. We're getting into the weeds here. If you don't listen, if you're not into toys, you have like the Leia blaster, the Stormtrooper one, the Han Solo one, you know, the Luke one, the Bespin one. You have all the lightsabers, the handheld ones, and then the ones that go up there, the Ben Kenobi and Luke's arm, and Vader's. And then, yeah, how many you sold just in the past 30 days of this lot? 675 lots.
That's amazing.
So think about how many counterfeit weapons are in the wild for Star Wars toys. You know, this is just one listing for since this has been up, 675 lots. So people are making bank on this, obviously.
And it's stuff like that that really makes it even more complicated to collect those original lines, you know?
So has Kenner gone after these people ever, or they don't care?
So it's, I don't know, it's kind of, well, it would be Hasbro now, because Hasbro owns, well, bought up what used to be Kenner. I don't know if they really go after that kind of stuff. I don't know what they consider like...
It's not worth it.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I guess it's just not worth it to them. I know that they try to keep it from happening at their shows, you know, like JoeCon and BotCon. Well, I guess now it's HasCon. Hasbro's got their own convention now called HasCon. So yes. they actually have rules, I think, that try to keep them from keep people from selling that kind of stuff on the show floor. Because I don't know if you're into the Transformers, but there is a huge market for third party Transformers, and it's.
Really?
It's a weird, like, legal loophole, I guess, because...
They're original robots, but they're not Transformers.
Well, there are some ridiculously insane companies right now that make really good Transformers that are the characters. They just don't name them the same. But they're basically, like, trying to produce stuff that Hasbro's not. So they're making, like... It blows my mind how all these companies exist, but I guess it has something to do with, like, Hasbro can't really trademark the look of a big robot. They can just trademark the names. So these companies, they're like, okay. They're in Japan and China and stuff. They're just all these third-party companies, and they produce these. And that's a huge market now. Like, there's tons of people that buy third-party Transformers.
So if you can't afford, say, a Generation 1 Optimus Prime, you're saying there's a company that'll build one almost exactly the same, but they'll call it something else.
It's not really necessarily that, because they're not really, like, copying, like, Hasbro's, like, molds. They're making their own Transformers, and they're trying to make them better than Hasbro is, basically.
Oh, then,
like,
yeah, then Hasbro has no right to go after
that's,
them. Then.
That's kind of the legal gray area, basically. Like,
unless there's a patent that they own for that toy, anyone can make a toy robot,
I'll have to send you some links so you can look at them, because they're crazy.
Man, the toy world sounds... the collector... I mean, the video game collecting world is nuts, but the toy collecting world sounds even... nuttier because it's been around longer than video game collecting. It's been around probably 40, 50 years, right?
Yeah.
And then you have the stakes are a lot higher because the number of toys that are probably worth four figures and more is a lot more than video games overall in proportion, right?
Probably.
And then you have the counterfeiters, and you probably have hoarders just the same, right? There's probably a guy out there that has 30 Star Wars 12-back Luke Skywalker figures. By the way, 12-back is the number of figures on the back of the card.
Yes. There was a story about a guy that I saw online a year or so ago where he was trying to make it his mission to buy every single vintage Ram Man figure in existence. I have no idea why, but this dude just bought – every time he found a Ram Man, he bought it. He wanted to own every Ram Man that was produced, which is probably impossible because there are so – like those He-Man figures were so, you know.
Even loose ones from
that's
the
what he wants.
Early 80s?
He just wants – well, like, yeah, he just wants – he just has tons of loose Ram Man action figures. price. I don't know why, but it's like.
So did that cause the price to go up on eBay for a while?
No,
no. There's just too many of them.
There's too many of them. It doesn't matter. You know? Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know if he was just doing it for attention or to be funny. I have no idea. It was so
now
weird.
Now you're bringing back bad memories because Ram Man was one I always wanted as a kid and never got.
Oh.
And whenever I went to a friend's house, they always had that. Because Ram Man was cool because he was the only one with that shape where the legs were together, right? And you stuck him in and he sprung out. It was a cool idea.
He didn't have the same body as everybody else. Everybody else had like that same basic body.
But getting back to the counterfeiting real quick, because I want to get into another issue where I want to see how prevalent it is. Because my cousin, going back to the Star Wars, even said that there's like different situations now where people are making they're being careful when they counterfeit the mint on card figures that they're weathering the cards to make it look like they're not making them perfect. So like it looks like it's a used old toy.
That's
still
dedication right there. That is crazy. I haven't encountered that personally, but I don't like not believe you. Like that's crazy.
and then also this is the scariest part where there's a guy out, I think it's Italy, has a bunch of new old stock card backs, real card backs.
Oh.
I'm not sure if they're the tri-logo ones where it's three languages or not. So it's a debate now where if you take an original card back and you piece it with the real figure and then you put a bubble on it. I'm not sure. He might have the bubbles too. He might actually have the real bubbles too.
You can buy those. You can buy those bubbles on like eBay.
What I'm saying, though, he might have the original bubbles, though, too, separately. So what happens then, in theory, if you can construct an old toy from old parts, but you construct it in modern age, that's not a counterfeit. What is it? How do you define it? How do you price that? How do you disclose that? It's so weird to think about. If I have an old Luke Skywalker card that's authentic, an authentic figure and bubble, and you just seal that with glue or heat gun on there, what do you call that? What the fuck do you do?
That's I have no idea. That's totally like out of the.
I'm so glad I'm not into toy collecting anymore. To that extent,
it's nuts. Yeah,
I just find whatever shit I found at the flea market.
There you go.
You know. What about finding toys at the flea market? I mean, in the past even 3-4 years, it's gotten a lot harder for me. Every once in a while, I'll still find some Transformers figures. But gone are the days where, like, 5 years ago, I think you probably saw it in one of my videos where I spoke about it, where, like, I found a bunch of carded G.I. Joe figures for, like, 10, 20 each from, like, the mid to late 80s, and I bought, like, 30 of
them.
That's
awesome.
For, like, $300. Like, those days are gone forever.
Pretty much. So I don't have, like, I don't really have flea markets where I live, which is kind of crazy. So I don't really have that. And I've never done flea markets. Yeah, there's some garage sales and stuff. You never find that kind of stuff at garage sales. Not around here anymore. There's some toy shows still that I go to. Like St. Louis and Chicago both have a lot of toy shows. So I try to make the trip because I live in between those two cities, basically. But my favorite one I go to every year is up in Chicago. It's like the Kane County Toy Show. And it's basically... They put it on fairgrounds, and it's basically a flea market that's nothing but toy dealers. And it's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's great. And you can usually find all kinds of cool stuff there. But, I mean, like, you know, we live in an age now where people know what things sell for. You know, these guys aren't just, like, like flea market people who came across some stuff they're trying to get rid of. These are toy dealers, so they know what their stuff's
sure.
worth, and they sell it. But it's still a lot of fun, and that's actually where I prefer to do a lot of my toy shopping, like, for me. Outside of, like, the stuff I buy to do videos of. Like, I love going to that show without really a plan or an agenda and just seeing what I come across at those shows, which is kind of what I started doing the toy hunting videos on.
Well, getting to your videos, I'm just curious about how... I'm obviously used to the video game collecting world. Is it similar with the toy collecting world where they'll just price off eBay and then give you a slight discount, or... Do you know that if the stuff sits on eBay, that it's hard to move those Star Trek Next Generation figures, you know, even for a dealer? Do they know that they just got to get rid of it since they have so much?
Yeah, I think there's a mixture of both of those kinds of dealers at these shows, really. And you can tell just by going into the booths which is which. Because there's always going to be those guys who have, like, the super rare Ninja Turtles figures that came out at the very end of that line that are a lot more scarce. And they know that, so they're pricing them accordingly. Like, the same that I could... Like, because the last toy show, for example, I came across a guy who, like... every Turtles figure he had was like an end run turtle figure from that last wave, which is all kind of expensive. And he,
the ones I text you about when I find them at the flea market.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, the prices on all of them were, like, I was looking at them going, oh, this is amazing. Like, I'm holding these figures in my hand. I don't see them very often. But then I hop on eBay and I'm looking. They're selling for the exact same price or even less than that on eBay. So it's one of those things where I'm like, well, it's cool to see these, but I definitely don't need to buy these from here because if I really, you know, eBay's a better option sometimes. So
is that a negotiating tactic? You go, hey, absolutely. Listen, dude, you're the same price. Can you give me like 20% off of this? And it's cash in your hand.
Absolutely.
You say that to them?
Oh, absolutely. And you got to negotiate. I mean, that's kind of one of those things. I do that all the time. I try to bundle some toys or basically just throw out a number. I don't try to undercut people too bad. But yes, if it's something that I can look up on eBay and see it's the same price, that's a great tactic to say, well, what if you knock off $10 on this, otherwise I can just get it here, you know, for the same price.
So what do viewers get out of your toy hunting show? Like, why do they enjoy watching them? What would you think?
The thing that people like about those videos is seeing the toys themselves up like on display, because there's all kinds of crazy stuff at those toy shows, and it's amazing because I am still, after all these years, discovering things that I've never seen before or that I completely forgot about, and I kind of wanted to pass that enjoyment on to the viewers with those videos. So that's what I like to do, is basically just show off the crazy and the unique things that I'm finding at those shows. Do you remember that show Toy Hunter that was on TV for a while?
Yeah, he actually was out of New Jersey, I thought, right?
Yes, I think so. Jordan Hembro is his name. So I wasn't a huge fan of that show, and it's not anything against Jordan or anybody. It's because of the way what TV is now and what channels want. That show focused on the money aspect of things, what things are worth, what they're selling for. I wanted to see the toys, and I wanted to know, you know, see the stuff he was actually finding. I didn't care about the worth. So I kind of tried to do the opposite thing with my stuff. I tried to focus on the fun stuff.
Was that controversial in the toy collecting community, that show?
Yeah.
Did it expose the hobby, or did some see him as unethical, trying to rip off some people? Or what was the thought about that show when it came out?
Well, I think a lot of people... So it's weird. You got the two sides kind of thing. Because I think a lot of just general toy fans still liked the show because it was still a show about toys on TV, which is pretty uncommon. And I think a lot of people just like seeing that. But there were, you know, there was a lot of people in the community who didn't really like the money stuff. They thought the whole thing felt fake and staged, which it's a reality show. It's not really real, you know what I mean?
It's tough, right? I remember the one episode I saw, he found, you know, what the hell was it? The Star Wars, the sit-down speeder bike.
Okay, yeah.
The toddler speeder bike. Not many of those are out there.
Right.
So in order to just stumble upon that, even with contact, might be tough. So maybe if it's pre-set up, who knows? It's reality. You know, but it's one of those things where, yeah, you'll never see – I've never even seen that in person, that little toy scooter bike.
And that's the stuff that I do like about those, when you get to see stuff like that. And that's the kind of stuff I wanted to capture for my toy hunting videos. So that's kind of what I go for. I try to look for fun, unique things, and I share that with the viewers.
I'm eBaying it. Pedal, speeder bike. Let's see if they actually come up for sale.
I have a you know those bouncy horses that toddlers – you ride on with the springs, like those old ones that were out in the 80s. I have a Battle Cat, one of those, from He-Man.
Are you serious?
I am serious.
That existed?
It did, and it's amazing. it's in my son's room.
Oh, my God. So that cool. Is fantastic. Not Power Wheels. What the hell were the tri-bikes called? The Big Wheels.
Oh, the
Big Wheels going to come back? Are they going to come back, you think?
I think there are. Aren't there? Big Wheels still out there?
I just saw a car commercial with a girl on a Big Wheel.
I think the Green Machine is still out, like, which was basically a Big Wheel, right? The Green Machine.
I'm looking online right now. Oh, they have them. 16-inch Big Wheel or Disney cars, $50.
Yeah.
So they still make
them. Still make that
there's
stuff.
There's the original one I had as a kid, secondhand. The one with the blue. Red. It was the yellow, red, and blue one. That's the original one. There it is. They still make them. God, I wish I had kids, maybe, almost.
See?
I can buy them
that. Look at you. This is the dangers of toy collecting right there. Look at all that stuff. You're remembering things. You're looking them up.
That's the original Big Wheel. The Big Wheel Racer.
Yeah.
Adjustable seat. Blue seat. It's red and has the yellow. Mine was beat to hell, though. Then again, I had the original one. My friends had the Knight Rider one. They had the G.I. Joe one with the water gun on it. So I had the shitty one we got at a garage sale.
Of course.
A lot of my toys were from garage sales. The only way I had a Castle Grayskull was secondhand at a garage sale.
Oh, yeah?
But when you buy it in, like, 1985, 86, it's only, like, 5 years old by then, right? 4 years
exactly.
old.
Exactly.
So it's not that old, right? So it's a different time. I wonder if that's the same way with toys now, where you buy stuff, you go to a garage sale, you see stuff that's 5 years old.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't see stuff. It's weird, because I think too many people just use eBay and stuff now. They don't throw their toys out of garage sales anymore.
Yeah, I don't want a big wheels. I don't want to grow up with a Toys R Us kid. So you talked about the reaction and to a show on TV like Toy Hunter. What was the – you were one of the pioneers of doing toy reviews online and covering it. How have you seen the genre evolve in your time, and how have you grown along with it since 2008?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things. When I first started doing it, I was – one of the only people doing it at the time, or, you know, focusing specifically on toys. And now there are so many toy channels out there. And so the biggest majority of toy channels out there these days are all aimed at the younger audience, mostly like the toddler age stuff or even younger. And that seems to be where all the views are at these days, which is nuts. I mean, you look at some of these videos that kind of focus on like the preschool era, the preschool age toys, those are all of those videos are like millions of views all the time. It's nuts. And it's because they're targeting these kids who just, they flip on YouTube on their mom or dad's phone and they just let it play and they'll watch the same video over and over and over again. I know, because I have a 3-year-old and I watch how he watches YouTube. So
that is like seeing the toy. It's like almost as good as having it. Is that what it is?
I guess so. And, you know, and that's kind of what they do. Like, those videos don't really review the toys. I mean, they're basically playing with the toys on camera, and kids like watching that.
It's like having a YouTube playmate almost.
It is. It's like it's a YouTube babysitter is what it is, unfortunately, for a lot of people, I think. I think they just let their kids go on YouTube and watch all this stuff, and it keeps them occupied.
And those are monetized channels. They make serious coin just playing with toys?
Definitely. And I don't want to, like, throw them all under the bus and say they're all terrible because I know some of the people who run those channels, and some of them do an actual real job. They do a lot of work. They actually work with the toy companies and produce decent content. But there is a lot of channels out there who are – only there to basically game the system as best as they can and get all those views, monetize those videos. And it's just, I sometimes I watch those videos because my son flips them on, and I just get so mad when I see these videos with like 3 million views and all they did was turn on a camera and throw some slime on top of some toys and make some funny noises. When I like put so much work and effort into my stuff, it's like, that's so
frustrating. You're
actually
trying to educate about how the toy is
exactly made,
the articulation
and
the joints.
I spend hours taking photos and editing my videos and editing my photos and putting this stuff up. And, you know, my videos do fine, but they don't do millions of views fine all the time. And it's just, it's
not
frustrating,
to,
you know.
Not enough to quit your day job, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I've been doing this for 10 years and it's still a second job, basically, to my day job, but
it's still a glorified hobby.
Yeah, there you go, glorified hobby, which is fine. I still love doing it, and I'm thankful for what I've got with it. So
do you ever feel the urge to try to cash in on the crazes, try to get those million of views, or you're like, nah, you feel dirty
doing
it?
It's like, yeah, I feel dirty doing it, and I've definitely done some I don't want to say that I haven't tried to do some, like, trendy stuff before, because I've definitely – you know, I see the trends sometimes, and if there's certain things that I'm like, well, I could probably do something like that, but I'll do it my way or do it better, and I'll try it out. But I was like, okay, so like the slime stuff is so huge right now. It's super weird, but it's mostly just like I just explained to you. It's like they take just random
toys.
Genre.
This is a whole genre?
Yeah, it's nuts. It's and like Spencer, my son, sees them all the time and he loves it. He's always like, let's play with slime because these guys are playing with slime on YouTube. And it's to the point now where toy companies are noticing that. And if you walk into like Walmart or Toys R Us, they're setting up displays up in the front of the store with all their slime toys on it. Or, you know, like, make your own slime kits and stuff like that, because it's popular on YouTube right now, and they know that. It's crazy.
So, wow, before that, you go back to the Ninja Turtles when they sold the ooze in the can, right?
Yes.
Otherwise, that was the only time we ever had slime as a kid.
Right, exactly.
And even that, I think they took off the market fairly quickly, didn't they? I mean,
there was slime with Turtles, there was slime with He-Man, because there was a slime pit, which is one of my favorite play sets. So there was a lot of random toys that had slime, and, you know, so I started doing videos on some of those, like vintage toys that have slime. I do that every October. It's my Halloween theme. And so I've been so I do the 13 days of Halloween, and I do 13 slime toy reviews, where I basically take these vintage toys that had a slime gimmick and I review the toy and show the gimmick. And those were, like, doing really well for me, and that was right before the slime boom. And now everybody is doing these crazy slime videos, and it's seriously, it's like, I feel like it's stolen my my views.
Your thunder.
Yeah, I was like, I was the slime guy.
You were the slime king. You were too ahead of your time. You're like Tesla,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I was ahead of my time.
Instead of creating electricity and Wi-Fi back in 1908, you're just doing slime reviews.
playing with the slime pitter.
So,
yeah.
So I was going to ask if how YouTube and toy reviews has affected the industry. And you just gave me a prime example, more slime toys.
Yeah, it has. It's crazy.
Is that the main way you've seen it get changed or cater towards a YouTube market?
Also the blind bag toys. Have you noticed in stores that there's a ton of toys that come in the blind bags these days? I don't know if you know what I'm talking about with a blind bag toy. But
are they sort of like chance toys where you buy something you don't know what you're going to get?
Yeah, and everybody...
It's almost like the coin machines. You put a coin in, you turn the thing, you get a pop bubble, and you open it up.
Essentially. But yeah, they're just like little bags, and there's like usually a minifigure inside of some sort. And there's like every company has jumped on the blind bag bandwagon, and it's because opening blind bags on videos has become very popular on YouTube.
That's good. Let's promote gambling to three-year-olds. That's fantastic. That's actually fucking fantastic. Jesus Christ.
Well, I mean, they're actually, because a lot of those toys are a lot cheaper than an action figure for the most part, you know?
So they've had them in Japan for years.
Yeah, they're kind of
like
a good impulse buy item, and they're really easy for parents to go, okay, that's like $4 compared to the $12 that most action figures are now, so I'll buy a couple of these blind bags for my kids. So,
but then you might get one you don't want. You might go, oh, I don't want that one. You got to buy another
one.
That's
the downfall, yep.
And then maybe there's a chase figure. There's one out of 30, and then your kid ends up buying 20 of them.
Exactly. Yes, that's the downfall.
So you got to bring a freaking X-ray machine into the store to see which one has what.
Man, that's why people always rip them open. You always see them opened up in stores. It's bad.
No, I am against that. I'd rather search for that one April O'Neil figure out of the 30 Ninja Turtles, you know, in 1989.
Right.
You know, do that. Remember that? How hard it was to find April O'Neil? I remember that.
And now she's the one that you always find at toy shows now. Nobody ever wants to buy poor April anymore.
Oh, the first edition one? Yeah,
well, she was definitely the harder one to find, because she had a ton of variants in that line too, which is crazy.
Yeah, but that first edition one, I remember specifically, because when I went to see Ninja Turtles with my dad in 1989, and the line wrapped around, we said, screw it, we're going to go to Toys R Us. And I remember walking to Toys R Us, turning right, and the Ninja Turtles were right up front, because I knew they were popular. And on the whole wall, there was one April O'Neil up above.
Ooh.
And that was it. Just the one.
Yep.
So I knew it that even as an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, that it was rare.
Well, you know why they did that, right? That was
because no one wanted a girl figure.
Exactly, boys didn't want to play with a girl figure. That was a big mantra of the toy companies for a long time.
But
I
don't think that was correct. I think that was correct.
Yeah, though. I know that's been a big subject of debate the last several years. Toy companies are just now finally like starting to put out female figures more often and boys toy lines.
Well, but I think because they didn't realize that girls play with them too, maybe not to the same extent.
Yes.
But, like, for example, going back to, like, G.I. Joe, I would have loved I always wanted, like, a Baroness figure. I always wanted, like, a Lady J. Probably had a crush on Lady J. You know? So, like, these are characters that are on the show a lot. Scarlet. You know, Covergirl, not so much. And that's really it for female G.I. Joes besides Jinx. Anyway. But I wanted a Baroness figure. Had they... You know, back in the 80s, they only made G.I. Joe figures for like 2 years. They made the same one and they stopped. They basically had a crossover 1 year, new ones, 1 year, new ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have bought those figures as a kid. I would have wanted a Lady J figure. My friends had it. So I always think that was fallacious.
Yeah.
April O'Neil, maybe a little different, not so much an action star as G.I. Joe, but
right.
Yeah, I still remember I walked away, my dad bought me Splinter that day, Raphael, my favorite figure, and Casey Jones, which was probably the coolest figure back then because he had the duffel bag to put the bat and the hockey stick with. But I wasn't talking about April O'Neil figures anyway.
Yeah.
Just as an aside.
We're
just
all
talking
over
toys.
The place.
new podcast, Talking Toys, Pat and Dan.
There you go.
So the slime genre is big now.
Slime's big.
How about the genre where I think you told me, like, you just take a toy that you already have and just put it in, like, an egg or Play-Doh?
Yeah, the Play-Doh eggs were huge.
Just to surprise you. You surprise the three-year-olds and they don't know what's inside? Is
exactly.
that how it works?
Yeah, so they basically they just put toys, any random toys, inside of colorful Play-Doh that they molded into eggs, and then they would just open up these Play-Doh eggs and pull the toy out, and that's the whole video. So they essentially made their own little blind bag egg toys. But that was a massively popular genre on YouTube until probably about just this year. It's just now kind of like seeing its decline in popularity. It's crazy.
Are kids just tired of it? Attention span?
Moving on to the next thing, I guess. Yeah,
What's a new thing, Dan? Come on. I want to get you. I want you to blow up here. I want you to get millions of subscribers here. What's a new thing?
I don't know. I can't. That's the thing. I feel like I can never catch that magic.
Are you going to dress your wife up in an Elsa outfit? You're going to be Spider-Man?
Well,
is that what you're gonna do, Dan?
Funny that you bring that up because
why did you talk about that? What the hell? And you told me about this genre a year ago, and I thought you were shitting me.
Man, okay. So of all the kids stuff that's targeting kids, there's actually a lot of stuff that's super inappropriate, which I think YouTube is finally cracking down on, thankfully. But there's a ton of people, like one of the popular genres, I guess is a genre, is whatever reason it. Is having a woman dressed up like Elsa, some dude wearing a Spider-Man costume from Frozen, Elsa from Frozen, a dude in a Spider-Man costume, and basically just running around, and I don't know, usually there's poop involved in the video somehow, syringes, and like I don't know why syringes were like a thing for a minute, and like surgery stuff, and like
what?
It's just the stuff that, yes, it's the stuff that looks so super inappropriate for kids, but they were like, everybody was like trying to jump on the bandwagon and copy it, and they were all like dressing up like Elsa and Spider-Man or putting Elsa and Spider-Man toys in their videos to capitalize on this crazy popularity. It's the dumbest thing.
They still are. 6 million subscribers. It's called Monster Toy or Toy Monster. Spider-Man and Frozen Elsa find a baby with Joker, Pink Spider-Girl, Superman, Catwoman, fun in real life. That's the title of the video.
When I was with Norm, I was telling this to Norm, the gaming historian, our buddy, last time I was hanging out with him, and I was like, look at these. And I pulled them up. We found videos called like Double Pregnant Elsa and stuff like that. And it's insane. So it's funny that you talked about me dressing my wife up like Elsa, because I totally parodied those videos for April Fool's Day this year, and I made her wear an Elsa wig, and I wore a Spider-Man mask, and we just did a really, really stupid parody, which nobody watched. So it didn't catch the algorithm.
The three-year-olds came to there and said, whoa, this isn't what I was expecting. No, this is a 10-minute short film with no dialogue, and then, okay, Snow White shows up, and they're holding a baby doll. This is insane. But like you said, I think their ride is over, because I think Google came out a couple weeks ago basically saying we're going to start cracking down on copyright infringement of characters. In this
case,
these are both Disney characters, Elsa and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So I don't think this video is monetized.
Yeah, that's always kind of been my biggest thing with those, is I never understood how they got away with it for so long, because that is, like, you know, you can't just show up somewhere dressed like Spider-Man and, like, promote yourself as Spider-Man. You know, like, if a fundraiser or something is going to bring in Spider-Man, you actually have to have, like, a Marvel-licensed, like, costumer to show up at these things. So I never understood how people could just dress up like Spider-Man and call themselves Spider-Man and make money off of it, you know? It's crazy. I don't know.
I just commented, Pixel Dan was right. This is freaking crazy.
Oh, good.
By the time you hear this, go to the Spider-Man and Frozen Elsa Find a Baby video and comment. Because most of the comments are just LOL, best YouTube channel, wow. Oh, magic video, thank you for sharing. And a bunch of stuff that's incoherent. Who's watching these videos?
Well, okay, look, and I see a lot of people talking about the YouTube algorithm and stuff like that in the gaming community and how things are getting hurt. Stuff like this is what's stealing all the views in the toy community. And this is the kind of stuff
that
I've been
going up against.
This isn't
even a toy video, though.
I know.
The Joker shows up and kidnaps Elsa.
Yep, but for whatever reason, the YouTube algorithms shove those things right up in the front. That's what gets suggested on freaking every video that goes out. It's insane. So, I hope they go away.
I'm just trying to get into the mind of the people making these videos. They're like, well, maybe we do plays in the park on the weekends. This is how we can make money with 6 million views.
Some of those videos are just bonkers. Like, I don't know.
It's insane. No, I'm watching it. It's insane. Like, a Superman shows up on a swing. Like, now this is me promoting it. Like, telling you how insane this is to watch. But I want you to Like I said, when you told me this was a genre, I couldn't believe it. Like, but then again, I'm old. I'm not three. I don't know what's popular. You know, Harley Quinn's in this too, probably at some point.
Oh, of course. Why?
So if I'm Disney, of course, I'm like, what the hell is this? It kind of tarnishes the brand a little bit. You know, I guess they want to, you know, they want to think that kids like babies and Elsa and Spider-Man. Oh, how's the fidget spinners? How's that affected the toy community?
Oh, so that's one of the big trends right now, and I've really noticed that lately because every video that my son comes across, they just have fidget spinners in the thumbnail picture, and there's just random fidget spinners in the videos, and sometimes they're not even about fidget spinners. They're just like, here's fidget spinners, just to catch the algorithm, I guess. I don't know, you know, and it's like one of those things, like I see a lot of people complain about those. I don't really care. I think they're fine for what they are. I'm not upset that kids like them. It's just like the Pog fad that we went through or anything like that.
Oh, you went through that. I stayed away from that.
Yeah. No, I had a ton of Pogs.
I knew that was stupid when I was 12.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's fads happen. It's whatever.
Milk Caps. Yeah, Pogs is the brand name. Milk Caps is a generic, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it is, yes.
I think that was probably bigger on the West Coast. By the time we got to the East Coast, like Hacky Sack, we got things a little later. It's like, nah, this
Hacky
is not
Sack. Good. Hacky Sack, yeah. Everybody was playing Hacky Sack when I was in, like, high school.
What about Nerf? Nerf sort of had a resurgence, right? Nerf was big in the 80s and to mid-90s and then went away, I think, and then came back with a fury, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Nerf is huge right now still, and there's a ton of really cool Nerf guns out there. In fact, I noticed the other day I was in the store, and I noticed that Super Soakers are back, and they're under the Nerf banner.
So they bought it out from Laramie? So, is that what happened?
Yeah. Did Laramie and Hasbro something? Hasbro owns Nerf, too. So I guess it's all Hasbro stuff now.
Evil Hasbro buying everyone out.
I know. Everything's pretty much Hasbro or Mattel, I guess, in some form. But
that's Pat saying it, not Pixel Dan. Don't blackball Pixel Dan. I can say that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm friends with all of those guys. I work closely with those companies. So,
but when we were kids, Nerf was mainly... They had, like, just the handgun, and they had the bow and arrow for guns, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically what they had. And, of course, they had the boomerang that didn't work, the triangular boomerang from the 80s.
Right.
I'm not sure they brought back that because it never worked. You couldn't even throw it. But now they have, like, sniper rifles, Gatling guns, shotguns, crossbows, and they don't go, like the bow and arrow, you could maybe shoot it like 20 to 25 feet, maybe 30 feet. Now I see these advertised, they shoot like 150 feet, these Nerf guns, you can like kill someone, you know, like, it's amazing, the technology. People tell me they go to like conventions, they have like Nerf fights with these guns and stuff. I'm picturing you know, airport security rifling through this stuff, I'm like, what the hell is this?
Oh my gosh.
Just think it's amazing. I think this goes back to, like, the man-child factor where, I would love to own all these Nerf guns. And I have a few from the swap meet. I have the sniper rifle. I found it for, like, $5. Of course I bought that thing. But it's just amazing that this stuff comes back around. Like the technology has gotten to the point where, like, if we were kids with this stuff, we would have never probably grown up. So now we want to become kids again and go back into it.
Totally, totally. You know, that's one of my favorite things about Toy Fair, actually, is getting to see all that kind of stuff. Because, I do a big focus. I mean, my channel, I focus on a lot of vintage toys, but I do a lot of newer toys, too. And it's mostly, like, collector-driven. So I do a lot of stuff that appeals to kind of, like, our generation. But some stuff appeals to kids, too. Like, Ninja Turtles is still very hot right now. And I do a lot of Ninja Turtles videos. And I get a lot of kids watching my channel because of that. But regardless of the things that I do videos on, I just love the toy industry. And when I go to New York Toy Fair... One of my favorite things is getting to see stuff like that, like all the crazy Nerf guns that are out there, or just like walking around and seeing all the cool, new, trendy stuff that they're trying to come out with for kids now. And that's just like super exciting to me.
I guess it's hard to always know what's on the horizon because like fidget spinners came out of nowhere, right? Like,
yeah,
it had existed for a long time, right? Like over 10 years. You know, the original lady, didn't re-up her patent, so she lost out. So now anyone can make them.
I know. Yeah, that's what I read about that. I thought that was kind of a bummer.
So the creator's not making a dime off of this craze. I mean, she's selling her own fidget spinners, but you know, the idea anyone can make them. Hasbro, Mattel can make their own, right? So it's just one of those things.
Yeah, they're everywhere, and they're all called fidget spinner. Like, there's no like trademark name. You know, there's no like official fidget spinner. They're all called that.
So I guess is the fact that like someone like you're not doing pregnant Elsa Spider-Man videos. you're doing serious, you know, like 20 people in the 20s, 30s, and 40s are watching your videos, right? They want to know about, you know, vintage Ninja Turtle stuff, G.I. Joe stuff, and the new stuff that comes out, which you're going to get into.
Yes.
So is this just not – maybe it's the same with retro games. The market isn't as big as people that want to follow new stuff for kids or modern games where it's a much bigger audience.
Yeah, it's exactly that, because that's kind of the weird niche-y thing that I'm in, and I think also why my views aren't always as, you know, reflective of some of those kids' videos. Because when I do videos that are more open to the modern kid generation, like when I review the Ninja Turtles stuff, that always performs way better because I'm appealing to the younger audience who's watching that new Ninja Turtles cartoon on TV and maybe buying those toys. When I review Masters of the Universe Classics figures, for example, which is like the modern He-Man toy line that's aimed specifically at collectors, the views aren't as big on those because I am specifically, like, the people watching those videos are the 30 and 40 year olds, you know what I mean, that
sure.
are collecting those toys. And so the market is, I mean, I can see it. I can see, I mean, I know my views aren't exactly like the measuring stick for everything, but you can see the difference between when I review something that's a kid's property versus something that's aimed at a collector.
And it seems like, I guess it hasn't translated. So when like a new G.I. Joe line comes out, our new He-Man figures, it's the 30 and 40 year olds that are buying the newer ones, right?
Yes.
Because there's not a He-Man show for little kids, right?
When they
rebooted He-Man a few years ago, that was an adult cartoon, right?
Well, so, I mean, they tried to get kids with that one. It just didn't work very well. That cartoon didn't last. It failed. That was 2003. That was a long time ago already, which is nuts.
Was it the reboot? Oh, my God.
2003.
I remember when they announced that, people were like, oh, my God, it's He-Man is back. And I'm like, He-Man's back?
Well, now they're trying to do a movie, apparently, but I don't know if I believe that.
What's wrong with the Dolph Lundgren one from Canon Films?
I like it. I like it for
I
what
remember,
it is.
As a kid, I remember not being interested. I was like, what the hell? Is this like space sci-fi? I'm like, what the hell? I remember the kid at his birthday party had the sword, the toy laser sword. It made the sound, remember?
Yep, yep.
I remember that. But I was like, this is not my He-Man. I knew
that
as a kid.
That's not my He-Man.
And these G.I. Joe movies can suck it that just came out.
Oh, man, that's funny. What about those new Ninja Turtle movies? You love those?
I haven't seen them, actually. But I say this, out of all these movies that have come out, at least the Transformers one had actual Transformers that could resemble the cartoon ones. At least the Ninja Turtles were Ninja Turtles. The G.I. Joe, which is my favorite toy and cartoon ever, the G.I. Joe movies almost resembled the cartoon and comic book not at all. And like, not at all.
Yeah,
And I did not have the heart to even be – I remember how everyone was pissed off about the Transformer movies when they came out. The G.I. Joe movies weren't even close to the toys. Like, not even. Everyone were in black. They all wore the same outfits. They didn't have their specialties. It was like, you know, Duke was a stripper.
Yeah. Yep. Magic Mike right there.
Magic Mike as it's not my Duke, damn it. The Baroness and Duke used to date. You know,
yeah.
It's like, what? No,
yeah,
no, that's not G.I. Joe. That's not, anyway, we're getting off topic there. So in terms of, like, you know, you talk about the toy fair and going to the toy shows, you do a lot of interviewing of people that are making these new toys coming out. Hell, at Comic-Con, your face is now plastered at the Mattel booth, right? You're up there because you review some of the He-Man stuff, and they respect that. You've gotten in with the toy developers. Was that a surprise that happened, or?
Yeah, that was cool because it just kind of happened organically as I started doing stuff. And Mattel was actually the first company that ever gave me that opportunity because back in 2008, when that new He-Man line first launched, that was kind of when I decided to branch out and do more than just From Pixels to Plastic. Because I was so excited about the new He-Man toys, I was like, I'm going to start doing videos on these new He-Man toys as they come out. Well, once I started doing that, I caught the attention of Mattel, basically. Because, like, He-Man.org, which is like the big He-Man fan website, they started posting my videos on the front page of the site, and that, you know, eventually Mattel was basically like, they reached out to me and they were like, if we started sending you the figures before they come out, would you be interested in still doing these videos? And that's kind of how I, yeah.
You're like,
and
what?
So, yeah. So at the time, you know, I mean, I was still brand new to doing this. So that was just like, oh my gosh, yes, absolutely. And so that's kind of where I started, first really working with an actual toy company in the industry, and that was what kind of started getting my foot in the door there. So I had this really great opportunity that was kind of thrust upon me, and you know, I fully admit that I was a rookie at the time. I had never really done that before. I was straight up fanboy who suddenly was thrust into this position of like working alongside a toy company. And it was just a thing where like all that it was they sent me a review sample and then I would do a video on it. So it's not like they were paying me for reviews or anything like that. But I got the perk of getting the toy before it was actually released. And so that kind of became like this big thing, which was really cool because like the community really, really supported me and they were like always excited to see my video on the new figure because they got a good look at the toy before it was released. And that's kind of what just blossomed into everything else I started doing, which was really
cool. Would you say, were you one of the first toy reviewers to get that sort of connection with the developers, producers to say like, get the sample figures?
I think I was one of the early ones, yes. And I specifically remember that being the source of some of the first like beef I ran into with some of the other toy reviewers out there.
Was there jealousy that you were the chosen one and they
weren't?
Yeah,
and it's kind of one of those things, and I don't even fault them for it because I've become really good friends with most of them now. Plus, I've earned, you know, like, I think I earned a lot of respect the longer I did this, and people realized I was, you know, the real deal and not just some kid off the street, you know. But it's it's that turf war thing, you know, like when you're kind of doing that, and then some dude just walks in and suddenly they're getting the attention. You kind of feel that you know, like who's this guy on my turf? So I kind of attributed it to that, you know. It was kind of one of those things.
Well, I guess it's not too dissimilar with the retro gaming community where there's a lot of infighting. There's a lot of jealousy. There's a sort of like, this is my territory, don't step on it sort of thing.
Probably.
We don't want you to get too big.
And that was kind of one of those things, like I only experienced that in the beginning. I think I'm pretty lucky now that I don't have that problem at all. And I don't know, I get along with everybody. And I go out of my way to be nice and talk to people. And that, I think, is part of the reason why I don't have any problems, really. I think there's people out there that don't like me. Because whatever, they just think I'm too happy or too, you know, like there's a lot of people that don't like me because I'm too upbeat or too happy, and it's fine. I don't expect everybody to love me. It's cool.
if you are without detractors, then you're doing something wrong, in my opinion.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Because people, at some point, people will be jealous of you or a hater because of your success.
Yes.
Or the fact that you've been doing it for a long time, or the fact that you're happy at what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Or just creating good content. So as far as I'm concerned, if someone doesn't like me, I'd rather have that versus everyone liking me, because that means I'm not big enough to people that are hating me.
I
want to be known enough that people hate me. At least a little bit.
You know you've made it when you've got a hater, right?
Yeah, right? That's what it is.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you're never going to avoid human drama, whether it's YouTube, if you're a musician, whether you're a dancer, whether you work at Taco Bell, there's always human drama and conflict when it comes in. And there's always going to be people jealous of one another. It's just the bottom line.
Well, you know, and I'm not even saying that I'm like exempt from that, because there's plenty of times where I see other guys doing videos that I feel like they're better than mine, and suddenly I'm a little jealous. I'm like, why is this person doing better than me? You know? But we all feel that way sometimes.
But you're not going to do like, I'm going to do like a pixel dance of Fody, 10 reasons why.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not going to go badmouth anybody. I'm not going to, you know, but sometimes you just feel that little sting. It happens.
Yeah, that's a lot. It's life, right?
Yeah.
I keep pushing you to quit your day job, but you push back. I want you to take that plunge.
I know. I would love to do it, but gosh, I think about that all the time. If I could dedicate all my time to just doing this, I'd get so much accomplished. But it's scary for me because I have a 3-year-old, and that's my biggest thing. So I want to make sure there's a safety net.
Yeah, I know, but sometimes you got to take a slight risk, my friend. I'm not going to push you right now too much, but hey, look who's writing on StarWars.com as a contributor.
That's true.
Pixel Dan.
That's true. Yeah, that was kind of amazing when that opportunity.
How did that happen?
Oh, man. So I think one of the things that is always the most humbling to me is when somebody who's working like in what I would consider like higher or bigger or better places comes to me and says that they're a fan of what I do. That's always amazing to me when I hear that. And that's basically what happened here. One of the editors at StarWars.com basically reached out to me one day and said, "Hey, I'm a big fan of your videos. I've been watching you for a long time. I specifically like your He-Man stuff. We have, you know, kind of an opening on StarWars.com for somebody to write about toys. Would you be interested in doing something like that? And that's how the discussion basically started. And so, yeah, I just do – it's just a freelance gig, but it's like a – it's a legit freelance gig, which is really cool. So, like, I get paid from Disney to write articles about Star Wars toys, which is kind of one of those like moments, like the, when I did my first article that appeared on StarWars.com, it was one of those things that like, man, that's one of those moments where you're like, I wish I could go back in time and tell like 12-year-old me that I would get to officially contribute to Star Wars one day in some form. And that's amazing.
Yeah, they say, what the hell's the internet? But after that, they're like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
This is fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. So that's fun. And it's very like, you know, it's a freelance gig, so there's not like a lot of pressure on it. It's kind of one of those things where like, if I come up with an idea, I throw it to my editor. If he likes it, I write about it and I send it in. So it's
Dan,
cool.
I think you're getting there, my friend. You got all this opportunity opening up right in front of you. It's right there. Next, we'll be talking about a book.
Yeah, a book. We keep talking about that kind of. I would love to do a book of some sort. We'll have to make that happen.
Maybe that's going to be it, Dan. Maybe you do a Kickstarter and you see how much money is raised. You're like, well, that's gonna float me doing a book for the next year or two.
So what kind of a toy book do you think we can do? Because let's talk about that for a second.
Oh, now it's we. How many books can I do at one time? I can do it.
Okay, I'm just meaning because you and I have talked about a toy book before. So there's a lot of toy books out there, and there's some guys who do some really cool toy guides, like action figure guides. Like Mark Belomo is pretty well known for his like Star Wars action figure guides and his Transformers guides.
Reviews of a G.I. Joe Tomart
guide
and stuff
and
like that.
I'm friends with a guy named Philip Reed, who's a relatively big name in the toy writing world, and he's written a lot of books on Star Wars toys and stuff like that. So there's a lot of toy guides out there. So like, I feel like if I'm going to write a book, I got to find a way to like be different from all of
that. We can't give it away. We've spoken about the idea.
Yeah.
We've spoken about it. Dan. You know it's a good idea, Dan. It's just whether or not we have time to do it, make it a reality.
We're gonna see each other next weekend, so we'll try to talk some more.
I do know this, Dan. I ain't working with a part-timer on a book.
Okay.
I'm gonna drop that. You gotta show some commitment, buddy. You gotta bring it.
So quit your job, or I'm not gonna work with you. That's.
I'm gonna dangle that over your head. No, we'll talk about it. Hey, we won't get into the video game years, but working with part-timers in the video game years was rough. I'll just say that.
Oh, the video game years.
I love John and Lance, but let's just put it this way. I wish they didn't have a day job to produce that show. You know, we could have got it out quicker. But then again, the show made no money. They would have been out of, you know, they'd be living on the street. Anyway.
Shout out to John and Lance.
Shout out to John and Lance. You're still with RetroWare TV, technically, right?
I guess technically. I don't really contribute there anymore. But it's one of those things that, like, I
Lance
don't know.
Lance will kill
like,
me if I say I'm not.
Well, I mean, it doesn't really affect me one way or the other. If I'm just like, I don't work for RetroWare anymore, that doesn't really mean anything because I'm not. I haven't contributed a video to them for a long time. But they were, like, the first website that kind of gave me a little break, I guess. And that was back in the days when websites hosting videos was a thing and it mattered, you know?
Sure. Channel Awesome, Screw Attack.
Right, sure. Right. So, like, when I first started doing From Pixels to Plastic, I think it was funny. I think you and Norm actually talked about it when you talked to him. Like, me and Norm and, like, Ben Hall were, like, in the Screw Attack forums, we were like the guys whose like videos were like pinned to the tops of the forums all the time.
Whoa,
right? Yeah, and that was that mattered though, right? That was like exciting to us and everything. So it's really funny because that's where we all started, and then we all ended up going over to RetroWare and like actually being part of RetroWare. So that was kind of fun, just because that was like my first like, wow, somebody cares about my stuff enough to like want to put it on their website. And
yeah, that's so, like me, I guess, when I got featured on Game Trailers, you know, I was a featured community host for the weekend. I was like, oh, my God, 10,000, 20,000 people are watching my Black Box videos. You know, it's like, holy shit.
Sweet.
Back in, like, 2009, you know. Speaking of video game years, you were one of the main contributors. I'd say the big contributors of that show were you, Eric, and me and Ian. We by far had the most number of recorded segments. Ian and I probably recorded for all but three or four. You probably recorded for all but a handful of segments. You know, like, what made you or what drove you to participate in that show so much? Was the fact that you just liked the project? You were tired of hearing me pressure you to do it? What was it?
No, yeah, I thought the project sounded fun, and I was excited to be asked to be a part of something that could potentially be something big. Like, I thought it was a great idea, and I thought it was produced well, and especially as the show went along, it got prettier and prettier looking, you know what I mean? I thought it was a well put together show, and you know, there was a lot of people involved in it, and you guys got a lot of names in the community involved, and it felt cool to me to like just be one of the guys that was like helping to contribute to something that like so many people in the gaming community was like part of. And it was something a little different too. Like, I love the toys, but I always love getting to branch out and do different things from time to time. And that was a nice little breakaway, and still something that I like. You know, I still love games, and I don't do a lot with games on my channel. So
I remember you fought to keep toys in the video game years, and I was like,
I did
man,
fight to
me.
Get toys in the video game years. That was my segment, bro.
And I remember John was like, "Well, we have to capture the toy vertical." It's like, John, the vertical. Stop with your fantasy business talk. This is video game history.
I want, when the video game years comes back, I'm gonna ask that the toy segment be added back in, and I'm gonna start a poll on the internet somewhere and see how many.
Dan, don't go to war with me, Dan. I was gonna say we would pay contributors if the show came back. Everyone would get paid.
That'd be cool.
Damn it, we weren't paid. I wasn't paid. You know, but it was fun. It was fun. It was just one of those things where unfortunately no one watched it.
Yeah, that was a bummer. It was a bummer. I wish it would have gotten more attention because I thought it was really well done. I thought you guys did a good job.
Well, thank you so much, Dan. I'm sure me and John appreciate all the lost hours of our lives. But the hundreds of hours of
loss. Well, you know, I mean, it's one of those things too. Sometimes we look at the view stuff and we get disappointed. But, you know, there's still people come up to me at conventions and they say, I love the video game years. And, like, they bring that up to me. And that's always cool to hear that, you know? So, you just got to take that for what it is.
Well, you still have some great moments. Like, we're the ones singing the Star Wars song. And basically with the Rancor monster with the mouth and stuff like that.
Or, like, when was it you and I that sang Pac-Man Fever together? Like, they edited that we were...
Yeah. We have a similar goofy-ass personality.
Yeah, that was fun.
I just have a little bit more of a meaner streak than you, but that's fine. No one should be as mean as I can be. Anyway. So good. So the flagship show that you started with from Pixels to Plastic, I spoke about you doing the opposite, from Plastic to Pixels. So finding video games that are based on a toy and doing that. So talk about that a little bit. And are you have plans to keep that going or to pursue that more?
I do. Yeah. So that was just my way to, like, we were just kind of talking about doing something different. Like, sometimes I wanted to challenge myself and try something different than I was already doing with all the toy stuff. And I still don't know if that was a good idea or a bad idea, because it's not like it's not like it's the super successful popular show, but I will say that I have a lot of fun making it. Because that's one that I do with Norm, the gaming historian, because he doesn't actually live too far from me. So one time he was just like, we should get together and hang out. And I was like, what if we did this while we hung out? And he thought that was a really fun idea. So basically what we do in the show is we do the flip of what From Pixels to Plastic was, because From Pixels to Plastic was my show where I talked about toys based on video games. So this show basically focuses on video games that are inspired by toy properties. So, you know, like the G.I. Joe games from the original NES, or getting crazy obscure and talking about Stone Protectors from the Super Nintendo. So games like that that are based on toy lines. And we kind of, it's basically like a glorified Let's Play, right? Because we sit down and we play the games without really playing them beforehand, so that we can try to get some raw reaction and everything to it. But we also incorporate like tiny history segment on the toy line that it's based on, and then Norm kind of does his thing and does like a tiny history about the actual video game before we do the gameplay thing. So we did like one season is what I called it, but it was like 6 episodes. We did that last summer. And actually, he and I just got together not too long ago, and we filmed 6 more episodes. So it's going to continue. I just have to start editing it and putting it together.
You want to quit your day job, Dan? I have the solution. You talk about Let's Plays. Why aren't you on Twitch doing Let's Plays of actual toys?
Just playing with toys on Twitch? Like... So like
that's
what?
Not silly. Yeah, I just watch a pregnant Elsa and Spider-Man, and that gets views. You're so, saying people wouldn't watch you play with like Ninja Turtles and doing a storyline?
So just pull out like Castle Grayskull and He-Man and Skeletor and just like reenact a scene with my toys?
Yes, absolutely.
And Let's I'm play being, I'm being with serious. Action figures.
I would watch that. People would watch that.
Would you? Are you sure? Are you sure people wouldn't watch it and go, "What is wrong with this guy?"
I just pointed out an example of 6 million views on an insane video.
You're not wrong.
There's people watching people eat food on Twitch now.
Oh, wow.
People would watch you play with, like, He-Man figures. Capture that toddler market, Dan. They're all on Twitch now.
Oh, man.
They're all on Twitch. Just think about it. Just think about it, Dan. That's all I'm saying. All
right. I will think
about
it.
Get yourself a Twitch channel if you don't have one.
I better do it before this channel. I better do it before this podcast goes live or everybody's going to steal the
idea. You better get it by tomorrow. You better sign up for twitch.tv/pixeldan if you don't have it. I'm serious.
Actually, I'm pretty sure I've got that already. I've just never used it.
Hey, we're in the age now. If it seems crazy, it probably might work, right? That's just the way it's happening.
That's true.
Is there, in terms of buying and collecting toys, do you ever find yourself getting to a point where I don't have room for this stuff or enough's enough? Especially with you, where you tell me, you know, I have like all these figures lined up for months that, you know, I have to review or, you know, like, does it get like, what do you like? You picture like, what am I doing? Am I going to give these toys away? Am I going to sell them? You know, like, do you get to that point where you just get burnt out or you got to find a new house to move into because there's no room?
Yes. To all of that, yes. That is crazy enough. That is a position I'm in at the moment. I'm actually doing the moving thing right now. It's just one of those things where we're moving to a new house. So as I'm packing up my toy room, it's kind of one of those things where I was just kind of like disgusted with myself while I was packing everything. I was like, why do I have all of this stuff?
Yeah.
I don't need this stuff. Yeah, but like you talked about with the review stuff, I mean, I get constant influx of new products showing up here for my videos. And it's one of those things where, like, I've got a shelf next to my workstation that everything just piles up on, and that's like my to-do shelf. And it's never empty because it's a constant rotating door of stuff. And you get to that point where you're like, okay, now that I'm done with a video on this, what do I do with it? Is this something I need to keep? Should I give this to somebody that wants it? Should I, you know, what do I do with it? And it gets bad because sometimes this stuff just piles up. And I did a collection room video not too long ago where I showed everybody how terribly messy my room was, because it got to a point where I was just like, I don't have time to actually come over here and organize it and sort it the way I want to. So things just keep getting stacked on the floor, and it's bad. It's bad.
Why don't you – do you have a Patreon? Why don't you do like a toy giveaway? You know,
That's not a bad idea, really. So what I end up, yeah, I should do more giveaway stuff like that.
Yeah,
I end up doing like I give a lot of stuff away to like friends or, you know, especially if they've got kids that want the toys. A lot of times when people come over here, I'm just like, "Do you like that? Do you want that? Do you want that?" Like I'm seriously just like trying to push things at them that I don't personally need to keep because yeah, I just rather get rid of it. And
is it almost like with video game collecting? It almost goes from the pursuit of the old stuff, right?
Yeah.
But with your world, though, it's the new stuff based upon the old stuff there's so much more of. So, for example, in the retro game collecting world, it's 99% collecting and buying the stuff that's been out for 20, 30 years. In your world, it's not just that. It's the new stuff now made to resemble the old stuff.
Yes.
Re-releases in the same, like G.I. Joe having the similar packaging, re-releasing,
yes,
that sort of thing. So that's, you're now straddling two worlds where your collection will never run out of size, like because you're just adding more and more.
Yeah, I'm just constantly adding stuff to it. And that's what's crazy because, you know, I've got all my retro toy lines that I like my Turtles and my He-Man and stuff like that. But yeah, like there's all these new Star Wars figures that are constantly coming out that I'm still picking up. There's all the new Marvel Legends action figures that I like to pick things up from. And then that's not even like getting into like the statue realm. Like what about all the crazy statues and stuff that are out there too that gets really crazy to collect? Because where do you put those things once you start buying them? You know what I mean? Those things take up tons of space. It's,
yeah, I'm thinking,
nuts.
I'm thinking They can give away videos. I'm thinking a Patreon toy giveaway. You mail out like 5 a month. I might start doing that. I have a storage of toys and stuff from the flea market and comic books where it's like, I don't have time to even sell these if I wanted to.
Yeah.
I might as well just give them away to people. Like, why not? Just put them in a priority mailer, randomly pick a few people a month, and there you go. Have fun.
There you go.
You can have it. You want an old toys. Board game I don't want? Have fun.
That's not a bad it. Idea. That's a pretty cool idea, actually.
Dan, I'm all about trying to help you out, my friend.
Thanks, Pat.
I'm always trying to make your life a little bit easier.
You're a good friend.
Even though the book won't make your life easier, but it might be worth it in the long run.
Yeah.
I've seen muscle figures make a big resurgence in recent years. At first it was, you go to Comic-Con, you see the muscle type figures.
Right.
Just a bunch of little mini pink guys and I can't even think of the ones, but they were like off brand. But now Muscle is actually back, right?
Yes.
Like Muscle branded figures.
Right. So it's a company named Super 7 actually has like the Muscle license. And they're doing this thing where it sounds weird. They're doing licensed Muscle figures. And what I mean by that is they're doing He-Man Muscle figures. Mega Man Muscle figures, Ghost and Goblins Muscle figures. Like they're taking all these other properties that they have the rights to and they're branding them as official Muscle items. And they're coming in like little packages that look like the old Muscle packages and everything. And they're cool. They're really cool.
they're cheap to make, right? They can pump those babies out.
Yeah, yeah. And they're fun and they totally hit that great nostalgia button. And there's a big market. Like, that's kind of one of those collecting genres. I mean, there's a lot of toy collectors that focus just on minifigures. So they love that kind of stuff, you know? They eat that stuff up. So
They put 3 in a package. Is that how many were in the old Muscles, or were they 5? It was 3?
It was 3 in a package on the blister cards, yep. So that's what they do with these, too. And then they even, like with the He-Man ones, they've even done some of the big boxed ones that's like 24 or whatever it is.
Oh, they did. Yeah. The big Muscle box ones. Yeah,
so they've done a few of those for the He-Man Muscles, which is really cool.
Yeah, I love Muscle figures as a kid. Because they probably were so cheap, and so my parents can buy them for me.
Right.
I'm looking at them right now. Oh, they had... Cutie figures. They had the female ones. That's right.
Yep, the cuties.
I forgot about that.
Uh-huh.
What a great... It's a weird time to be alive, I guess, because it's so easy to make these toys nowadays. I mean, there's these Chinese websites where you can just have them make toys for you. All you gotta do is get someone to do, like, the 3D design for it, and they can make toys.
Oh,
I saw
totally.
Someone, I saw someone at Comic-Con have a line of toys based upon all, like, superhero properties that were out of copyright, like the Phantom and, like, the older, heroes from the 30s and 40s and doing figures that they had someone custom make.
Right.
Incredible.
Right. It is cool. And it's fun, too, because we're at this point where, like, a lot of these smaller toy companies are trying to do, like, these small-run productions of some of the toy properties that are a little bit more obscure that has a bit of a niche fan base. Like, there's a small company called Boss Fight Studios, which is actually – they make some really great stuff. They're made of Hasbro guys that worked on G.I. Joe and Star Wars and stuff. So they do their own, like, really well-done 3¾-inch figures. They did, like, this whole series of, like fantasy-type figures, like Medusa Gorgons and stuff like that. So that company is – doing Bucky O'Hare figures now. They're
looking at it right now.
They're working with like Larry Hama and that group, that team, and they've got the official license and they're producing new Bucky O'Hare action figures and they look incredible. And that's one of those things that, it's so niche, but it's so fun for those of us that remember that and love that stuff.
I'm thinking YouTuber action figures, Dan. What do you say? Boss Fight YouTube?
Yeah, there you go.
No one's done it. They've done the little Minecraft figures, right, that are in Toys R Us.
Oh,
like Minecraft streamers.
Tube Heroes or whatever they're called. They're called, like, Tube Heroes, right?
Yeah, but no one's done, like, how about a Pixel Dan, a Pat NES Punk figure, an ABGN figure?
Come on,
let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's figure out how to get that done. Do you think people would buy them?
Let's get you paid, Dan. Let's get you off your day job.
Okay.
Any idea I can possibly think of,
I would
I'm
love
to make it work.
I would love to. People have said that to me for a long time. I don't know how serious they are, but people always tell me that they want a Pixel Dan figure, and I think that sounds so boring.
Well, what sort of print run do you have to do in order to make this a possibility?
I would. So that's not a cheap thing, I would imagine. That's, and I know some friends who do this thing, who do that sort of thing. And, you know, there's a lot of toy Kickstarters out there, and that's kind of how they get these projects going. They run the Kickstarters, and they get the money to do the production. Because
what was the G.I. Joe type of one last year? It was like Eagle or something?
Eagle Force. They're doing – that company's still doing stuff. And, you know, they did the – October Toys, which was friends of mine, did Skeleton Warriors. They did a Skeleton Warriors figure on Kickstarter. I don't know if you remember that toy line. That's an old, another old
line. That's an esoteric one.
That's kind of like, I know you guys talk about Kickstarter for video games a lot, but there's a lot of toy Kickstarters out there now too that sometimes they're really great and they work well and they do exactly what they're supposed to do. They allow somebody to, a smaller company to do a production of figures for people.
Very cool. Yeah. All right. We'll have to talk offline about this. This could be fun.
Yeah. We got to find somebody
How can I secure the rights to AVGN action figures?
We got to find somebody that can sculpt. We got to find somebody that can...
Well, that's the deal, right? You got to get the 3D sculpture.
We got to get some talented people so we can get some quality toys made. Yeah.
Find the manufacturer that won't rip you off, right?
Exactly.
At the same time. I would probably, you know what, probably be the cheapest and best thing to do? You do it like the Secret Wars 80s Marvel figures, where you, no articulation, just the rubber arms and legs.
There you go.
You know, like, that wouldn't cost
simple
that much,
five
right?
points of articulation. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Swivel the head, swivel the shoulders, and
move
the
legs.
Joints.
Yep.
That's it. Oh, man. I was at Comic-Con was it 2 years ago, where you can get your own Predator. I'm just going off now on just how figures have evolved. You got the Predator figure that could hold your own head. They would do a 3D image of your head, and so you can buy a Predator figure holding your severed head.
That's cool.
And spinal cord.
That's so cool.
That's how far we have come in this world. What do you think about – we're talking about resurgence of the figures. Do you ever get a point where you feel like the audience is now officially getting milked, where it's like, all right – like you, when you said they're redoing Skeleton Warriors as a figure line, I'm thinking how many people possibly were into that toy line when it originally came out, right?
Well, and that's and you're right about that. And the reason I know that that's a good fact, that's a good one to bring up, Skeleton Warriors didn't survive past the first figure. They got the first figure produced. When they tried to do another run for the second figure, they didn't get enough sales to produce it. So,
I mean, geez, I don't remember ever watching the cartoon when it was on, right?
And it's a shame because sometimes you want to see that stuff succeed and get out there, but you got to face the truth sometimes. Sometimes the audience just isn't there to support that sort of thing.
Sure. What was the figure line I saw? It was an 80s one. I think it was Mattel. It was like combination diecast and plastic. Bionic 6, was it?
Yeah, Bionic 6. I remember that.
So here's a toy line that, me being an 80s cartoon and toy aficionado, I hadn't even really heard of. And so someone's showing me the figures on the card back, mint on card, as they say.
Yep.
And I'm just like, that's awesome, but I can't get into that because I never knew it as a kid, right? I never saw the cartoon. That was on for 3 years, 87 to 89. So now you're talking about something like Skeleton Warriors. It was on for a blip, right?
Uh-huh.
And you have maybe, I don't know, 1,000 kids that still remember the cartoon. And someone tries to get a Kickstarter going again, and it just falls flat on its face, unfortunately, because there just isn't the marketplace, right?
Exactly.
There's just too many other toy lines out there that you can redo. Even Bucky O'Hare has 100, and that's not even a huge one. That is 100 times the amount of people that remember that versus Skeleton Warriors.
Exactly. Yeah, it gets real crazy. And like, especially because of Kickstarter, we're at this point now where everybody's trying everything. They're trying to bring everything back, and it just can't work that way. I mean, there's going to be a limit to that sort of thing of what's going to be successful and what's not.
Is it because the licenses are so cheap and you can basically work on it? Well, you know, give it to me. If we hit our goal, we'll give you a percentage. If not, you know, there's no risk, or, you know, maybe it's one of those sort of deals where.
Yeah, and sometimes, like, the original creators, like, get involved in that sort of stuff. Like, I know, with Skeleton Warriors specifically, like, that was a Gary Goddard property, and he was involved with that, you know, and got them the license and all the original materials to work off of to produce that line, and it wasn't successful because, unfortunately, there just wasn't enough of a fan base still there for it. So
where do you see Where do you see the mask figures? Do you think see a resurgence of new mask figures come back, or is that too niche?
That's one of those things that a lot of people have wanted to see for a long time, and that's supposedly part of that new Hasbro movie universe that they want to do, right? With Transformers G.I. and G.I. Joe.
Transformers, mask.
What else are they? Rom the Space Knight is in there, I think.
Rom the Space Knight, yeah. And then Visionaries, which Visionaries no one saw as a kid. No one had the figures, almost.
So
it's barely above Skeleton Warriors.
I guess if they could get that movie happening, then yes, there'll be a toy line for the movie. But
Mask was popular for like a 2-year period.
You're right.
It was.
So if they brought that back, let me ask you, would you want to see them done the same way as the originals, like with the tiny little 2-inch action figures? You would?
Yes.
Because I think there's another kind of way to look at it where some people think that could easily be incorporated into the G.I. Joe toy line in that size.
Well, they did do a Matt Tracker 3¾ figure.
They did a Matt Tracker in the G.I. Joe 25th anniversary line, which is a very cool toy. And I think that's kind of got people thinking, well, why don't they just do that? Why don't they just bring those characters into the... And especially if they do that shared movie thing, I could totally see them being like kind of compatible, you know?
I'll give you one reason why they'll do that, because the toys will cost a hell of a lot more if they're bigger.
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
You know, there's a difference between a toy that's like 6 inches long versus one that's 30.
Well,
you know,
and the smaller you make the figures, the better chances you have of getting vehicles too, because let's face it, you don't get a lot of vehicles these days on the toy shelves because they're too big and they're too expensive and they take up shelf space.
Oh, is that why? You won't see like a big Ninja Turtles blimp anymore?
Well, Ninja Turtles is a kind of an anomaly because they did make a new blimp, and they did make a new gigantic play set. Like, I think Turtles kind of broke the mold of recent toy lines, because until that new Turtles line came out, we never saw big vehicles anymore. That kind of was a thing of the past, vehicles and play sets, because they're big and they take up shelf space, and retailers don't want these giant boxes taking up all the shelf space.
Now I'm looking up Ninja Turtles vintage blimp because I never had it as a kid. My neighbor did.
I love that you keep just looking things up as we're talking about it.
Hey, $650 in the box. Holy crap!
Whoa, you can find one cheaper than that. You can get one cheaper.
Oh, this is one for $150. Okay, that's a little more reasonable.
You could probably
just lose for $45.
There you go. Get a loose
one. Yeah, screw it. Put some helium in that sucker.
Float it.
Does some people do that? Maybe they do. I don't know. I do remember being jealous. When I was a kid, the only Ninja Turtle stuff I had, like, for the most part, was G.I. Joe, I had some medium-sized vehicles. For Ninja Turtles, I had, like, the little motorcycle with the sidecar. I had the catapult, the Donatello catapult. Not much else. I only had a few of the little small size stuff. The stuff that cost, like, you know, $15 back in, or $12 back in, like, 1990-91, you know?
Yeah.
Let me ask you, this is the question of the day, Dan. How do you feel about the world of Funko Pop?
I'm totally fine with Pops. And I know that I every time you – I always listen to you kind of like you're waiting for the bubble to burst, right? And
it's going to bubble.
It's going to burst one day. The people at Funko know that. Okay, they're not blind to it. I will tell you, I'm friends with one of the designers at Funko. He's a good friend of mine. So – but – Pops,
no negativity from Dan and his channel.
Here's the deal. And I know there's some people that are just totally against the Pop thing, but they found a cool thing where, like, they were able to scoop up all these licenses. They can sell those things for relatively cheap. So, like, they're picking up anybody that may not even be a toy collector. They can walk in the store and they can get a $10 toy based on anything that they like, right? And that's the beauty of that toy line. That's not something that you really have to go out and collect everything. You get one or two based on what characters you like, and you put it on your desk, or you put it on, you know what I mean? So,
and I'm not speaking. I'm speaking to the manufactured scarcity.
Okay, yeah.
I'm speaking to when I go to Comic-Con, and you have someone with literally a 10x15 booth of 2,000 Funko Pops, and you have a sticker on one saying limited gold Stormtrooper $350, and I'm like, who the hell is buying that?
I know.
Who's pushing the value up on that?
Well, that's all I'm asking. The exclusives are the San Diego exclusives, they're so hard to even get. It's such a nightmare.
Well,
so,
I mean, they're not the only ones. I mean, Lego does the same shit.
You're right. Lego's horrible.
They did the lottery, and hell, I did the lottery too, where you got the exclusive, like, Batman and Superman ones, only at Comic-Con, and there was a 8,000 people online just to get the lottery ticket.
Totally.
To get it.
And
then they're on eBay for $800 that night and they sell.
That's the
worst. Little fucking 1-inch Lego.
I hate that. Really hate that.
All I'm saying is this. People out there, you're not going to get rich off your Funko Pop collection.
No.
The same way you never got rich off your Star Trek Next Generation Playmate figures.
Yep.
It ain't going to happen.
Or your Beanie Babies or anything like that. Yeah, I agree with you on that. I don't think people should be buying those things as like...
To invest. An
investment. No way. Like those should be exactly what they are. Fun little desk toys that you pick up the things that you like, you know?
I have Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
I have a Peter Parker one. I'm not saying you shouldn't own them. What I'm saying is don't buy into this whole, yeah, well, they're only going to go up in value because look what happened to the Beanie Baby market. Look, you know.
Absolutely.
They've written books on it. I remember my grandma on the Home Shopping Channel in the 90s trying to buy those stupid things. Like, she was buying those.
It was nuts. The Beanie Baby thing was crazy. Yeah.
Dan, what do you got coming up in the future besides, you know, maybe a book and maybe a new toy line?
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess as far as my channel goes, it's just – so I do a ton of videos, and it's different for me than like, you know, with like – well, you know, you got the podcast and you got the punk videos, and your punk videos you do a lot more work and editing on, and so they come out, you know, kind of sporadically, right?
You can say that.
So with the toy review stuff, I pretty much do a daily video. So I have a video on my channel every day, at least, of a new toy that I'm reviewing. So basically, that's kind of what my calendar looks like. I've just got a ton of toys that I'll be doing videos on. I've got other things in my head that I want to do. I would love to get back to a more show quality kind of format, kind of like what I used to do with From Pixels to Plastic, where I would actually like talk about a toy line as a whole. I want to produce something that's more of a show like that. And I've got a lot of notes and a lot of ideas in my head. I have no idea when I'm actually going to find the time to start production on something like that, but it's something that I want to do in the future. Otherwise, I have a lot of travel coming up.
Comic-Con. You are the king of Comic-Con.
Gosh, yeah. So San Diego...
I have to tell the story, Dan.
Okay, I knew this was going to come up. Go ahead.
Because you literally were wearing a crown.
Was I? Literally?
I don't know if it was a Burger King crown or where you got a crown. We are upstairs at Comic-Con.
Crown.
They have the medium-sized... panel rooms. And I see Dan walking around. He's saying hi. He just left a panel. I don't know what it was, a Ninja Turtles panel.
It was the He-Man panel, the Mattel.
The He-Man
Mattel
panel.
He-Man
the Mattel panel.
Yep.
This is probably 2012 or so, 13.
Yep, that's about right.
Dan's getting stopped by like a lot of people. Like, we're talking how AVG and how James gets stopped at video game conventions. Dan's getting stopped here. I come up to Dan and go, "Hey, Dan, what's going on?" Dan's like, "Yeah, nice to see you, nice to see you." Shakes my hand like I'm one of the other 100 fans that shook his hand and walks away from me.
Hold on. I realized it.
Dan. And you stop and you look right through. I'm like, "Dan, it's Pat." And it took you like a whole 5 seconds going, "Oh my God, it's Pat." You try to Hollywood me at Comic-Con, Dan.
To be fair, that was the first time we had met in person. So
was it? So it was 2012?
Yeah. I think. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was right before we did Video Game Years. We started doing Video Game Years, what, end of 2012?
Yes. I think
we started filming.
Yes. So that was our first time meeting in person. But yeah, I totally did that. I felt real bad if that makes you feel better. I thought
it was hysterical because you were in that mode where I'm going to shake as many hands as I can and get through Comic-Con, and, you know, the king of Toyland.
Well, you just
pixeled out.
I mean, yeah, you just happened to catch me with that crowd. I mean, cuz that was the Mattel He-Man, you know, so like that, those were the guys that watch my stuff. So yeah, you happened to catch me right at that opportune moment.
Oh, that was hysterical. But we had fun. We had fun at Comic-Con last year doing it. We got a panel.
For the retro
game collecting 101 with Andre Meadows and James and Ian. That was great.
So good. It was my first ever panel at Comic-Con. So that was one of those.
Did you keep your card?
Ian actually
Ian framed his card.
I'm probably going to frame mine too. I've got it still. I'm just waiting because I'm waiting until I get settled into the new place and I probably frame it because that was a cool experience to say I got to be on a panel at San Diego Comic-Con. So Thank you, Pat.
I was going to say thanks to your pal, Pat. This
is yeah.
You thanked me. He has never thanked me before. Damn it. Ian didn't even know he was going to be on. It was funny. I'm like, yeah, Ian, I got the panel. And he's like, oh, yeah, cool. I said, you know, you're on. He's like, oh, what? I'm like, yes, I put you on the panel. I put you on. Like it didn't click with him right away. He was on a panel at Comic-Con. But hopefully we get another one this year.
Yeah, I hope so.
It'll be great. We didn't even get into the fact that you're a part-time pro wrestler. We didn't even get into that part.
Oh, yes, I do that as well. I am a man of many, many hats. I wear many hats. I've been doing that a lot longer than this toy thing because I started doing that right out of high school. As soon as I got out of high school, I went to pro wrestling school and got trained. And then just I was real, real serious into it for several years where every weekend I was traveling, you know, around in Illinois or St. Louis and working different shows for a long time. So
you were getting paid. You were a pro wrestler, even if it was $5. That's
exactly.
A pro wrestler,
you don't
right?
get paid a lot on the indies. But yes, I was getting money to wrestle. So
would that have been your total dream if you could do that full time, be a pro wrestler? Would that have been it?
So it kind of got to that moment where I had to make that decision because I was thinking about leaving and going off to actually try to get into one of the bigger schools and, you know, and make it something. And it just I kind of just sat down and debated it and decided that I didn't really want to do it full time. I didn't want to do it as a full time thing. So I kind of backed away from it. I'm still involved though in the local promotions here. I still have a lot of fun with it. I just tag teamed with Billy Gunn last weekend. So
oh
yeah
oh
so
wow
I'm still doing it. It's fun.
Right, so you're still in ring shape. You can still work a match. And work
I'm
a 10-minute
in,
match.
I'm not. Yeah, I'm not in as good ring shape as I should be. But I can still do a 10-minute match. Yes.
Definitely. You got to work out with Normore, right?
I should work out. Yeah, I should.
What's your wrestling name? Your character name?
Spencer Powers. The Spotlight Spencer Powers.
And you're just like a cocky heel, or what?
So I was for a long time. Currently, I'm running as a babyface. I'm actually part of a tag team right now called Attitude Inc. And okay. Yeah, so we're a babyface tag team.
What's your finisher?
Currently, I'm doing like a diamond cutter kind of thing. After I turned babyface, I wanted something that I can kind of hit fast and get a reaction, so that's why I'm doing that. But when I was running as a heel, my biggest thing was always that I was the master of the abdominal stretch, and I would beat people with the abdominal stretch. That was my
thing.
They would tap to the ab stretch, so that was my thing.
That's really funny. I still have dreams where I'm a wrestler, and this kind of maybe this sort of goes to my YouTube career or anything else, where in my dreams I rarely actually wrestle. I'm always like overlooked, where I'm just like on the lower rung where they don't give me an opportunity to wrestle. That's all. So it's like even in my dreams I can't even wrestle a match. I'm just like, what? I know how to wrestle. I can do an arm drag. Why don't you give me a chance?
Give me a chance.
And they never do it. I can never prove myself. And that's probably, if I pursued pro wrestling, that's probably exactly where I would have ended up, where I would have been like probably pretty decent, but never given the opportunity. So I just wallow and just, you know, just.
That's funny.
Never thought about it, though.
I love it.
I never thought about it.
I still love it. And, you know, I really accredit pro wrestling to me being able to do what I do now on YouTube. Honestly, like being a pro wrestler gave me my voice. It basically forced me to do public speaking. It got me out there in front of people. It got me to know how to project. I'm a very loud talker anyway, but I project, you know, and I think I got all of that. My charisma and everything is because of all the years I spent doing the wrestling thing. So.
Well, you know what, Dan? I'd love to see you wrestle, work a match sometime. I'll do a run-in at an event.
Everybody always wants me to wrestle 8-Bit Eric, so maybe one of these days we'll make that happen.
One of these days. I think you might be able to take him. You might be able to take him. Dan, where can people find you on Twitter and on YouTube?
Sure, yeah. Twitter is @PixelDan. You can find me on YouTube. It's youtube.com/pixel-dan. Or if you just search Pixel Dan, you're going to find me. It's going to be the first thing that pops up. So it's very easy to locate.
Search for Pixel Dan impregnates Elsa, Spider-Man, Purple Joker.
Yeah.
cameo, whatever the hell it is. Dan, this is great. I'm going to see you in a few weeks at Too Many Games, and I'll see you at Comic-Con. We've got to talk more often. I'm kind of jealous that you live close to someone like Norm. You know, like, I don't live close to anyone that I know from either the old school Retroware days or YouTube. It's sort of me by myself here on this island. Maybe I'll move to where you guys are at. Where do you live again? You're in Missouri. Where are you at?
I'm in Illinois. Norm's in Missouri, but it's very close to each other. So we're neighboring states.
All right, Dan. Thanks for coming on board. And we'll talk more about our various potential business ventures, book, and toy line later on.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for having me, Pat.
Thanks again to Dan for speaking to me. You can check him out on YouTube and on Twitter at PixelDan. If you enjoyed the Not So Common Podcast, please subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Stitcher, or whatever you use to listen to them. You can rate the podcast and leave a comment to help give it a boost, and feel free to spread the word via social media and let everyone else know how much you enjoy it. Finally, if you want to help directly support the Not So Common Podcast, please check out patreon.com/patcontry. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.